Accession number 20457, reel 24.
Brigadier Randall, reel 24.
Looking back on Kenya now, do you think that you learned anything in particular from having been engaged in the counterinsurgency there?
Well, me personally, or the British Army?
You personally.
Oh, well, of course, I learned an awful lot. But because there I was administration, I mean, I went out to companies a lot, and therefore I was, albeit a touched on observer of how our operations were organised and the sort of general direction of the campaign, and it stood me in good stead later on when I was on operations in Cyprus and later on in the West Indies. So that, I learned a great deal.
And you mentioned the Army. Do you think the Army learned a great deal from the operations in Kenya?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was successful in the long term. It's come under a lot of flak recently by revisionist historians, but that doesn't concern me. The fact was that we were sent out there the British Army was sent out there to do a job of work, and it did it. And it learned a great deal in the process.
Can you think of anything specific that it learned?
Well, it reinforced a lot of old lessons. Any solution has got to be fundamentally politically based. You've got to get your political aim right. It's not like a major war where your sole aim is just simply to defeat the enemy in the field. So you've got to get your political aims right, and therefore your military effort tailored to fit that. I think we got that right, in that we weren't dealing with an upsurge of Kenyan nationalism so much as an effort by the Kikuyu tribe to dominate the whole country. And of course, at a lower level, it gave a lot of officers and NCOs a great deal of practical experience in leadership and in operations. I think it was also a great tribute to the national servicemen, because the bulk of the soldiers were national servicemen. And it's surprising, really, how well motivated they were and how effective they were. It's interesting that an ex-national serviceman last September, he organised, an ex-private soldier, a reunion of all the men of the Devons who had served in Kenya. It wasn't done by... And anyway, he wrote to me, and I was able... A lot of officers turned up, but it was a tremendous number. I think there were about 80 of us, I think, of just ex-national servicemen I was up at the bar getting a drink, and I looked at a chap, and I said... I know you, don't I? And he said, yes, you ought to. So I was your batman. Dear old chap from East Devon, proper old Devon bloke he was. And we had, but I didn't mention that because clearly it meant something to the lives of those national servicemen. They wouldn't have bothered to turn up after all this time if they hadn't felt that the comradeship and whatever was worthwhile. Oh, that's a slight digression, but I think you're bound to learn something from operations. If nothing else, it sorts out the good NCOs from the bad NCOs, and it sorts out the good men from the bad, the bluffers from the, and so on. So it bound to be valuable. Yes, I guess about it.
You mentioned NCOs and sorting out the good from the bad. It's often said by theorists that in counterinsurgency, it's really the NCO level of the army that is of critical importance. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so, yes. I think that's absolutely right, because you're not, in, generally speaking, involved in major deployment of large number of troops in a set piece battle or even an encounter battle. They're usually of the sort of patrol ambush nature, and by the nature of things, that's most of the leaders at that level are NCOs and very junior officers, second lieutenants. Kenya was a company commander's war, really, but as you rightly say, the quality of your NCOs was a dominating factor.
Did you know what you were going to be doing next when you came back from Kenya? Had you had a warning order?
Personally?
Yes. You personally?
No, I didn't. Then we went back. And in fact, I went to the military secretary's branch. I said I'd quite like to be a brigade major or something like that, and they hadn't got something coming. They were quite understanding, really. They gave me actually 6 months, which for a captain was quite exceptional.
6 months of leave?
Well, yes, they sent me on a company commander's course at Warminster. But it was quite nice. My wife and I were able to go over to Canada and see a lot of relations in Canada. I don't quite know why the chap was so indulgent. I mean, captains didn't normally get 6 months gap, but it just worked out that way.
Did you learn anything that you can remember on the course at Warminster?
Yes, there were some interesting people. I've been on one before, just after the war, where I reckoned, or most of us reckoned, we knew more than the instructors about fighting. And we were pretty idle and pretty barbary. And I don't think I did very well on that, I seem to remember. But this one was a bit more important. I was now acting major. I did quite well. I got a good grading. I learned a lot, actually. I mean, it was a jolly good course, and there were very high-quality instructors. I spent a lot of time arguing with a very difficult chap called Douglas Darling, because I didn't agree with a lot of his technical teaching. And we had one or two flaming rows.
Do you remember what those were about? What the tactical issues
About
the
Test Bridge
were.
Garrison. Yes. An exercise about that. And I said, well, I don't mind what you think, I happen to know myself that this doesn't work out. And of course, he was just about to throw me off the court, but then he was that sort of, he said, oh, well, that's different. He said, come over here. And I told him about the Satang River episode, and he listened to that with attention. Actually, he was a bully, but he actually quite liked chaps who stood up to him. And if you could back your arguments by practical experience from war, you were home and dry. I mean, I got a good report simply because I fought my corner, and that annoyed him. He quite liked men who stood up to him, provided that he thought they knew what they were talking about. So, but I mean, that's precise. No, it was a jolly good course, actually. It focused my mind on things. It's always been a good course, though. I learned a lot.
Had the things that were being taught there in 1955, presumably, when you went there, had they changed from what had been taught immediately after the war? Had there been any development in tactical ideas?
Not a great deal, really. Mm. We were still thinking in terms of the Second World War. Mm. I mean, nuclear warfare at that level had not been thought out. There was no doctrine. I mean, we just touched on it on the Staff College in 1950, but there was no nuclear training then. There'd been the lessons of career, of course, but basically, apart from, there'd been improvements in weapons, there'd been improvements in, APCs and things kind of things, but basically, the doctrine hadn't changed much, no.
Was what you were taught at Warminster more attuned to European fighting than to...
Tended to be, yes. Yeah. But then the bulk of the British Army was in Germany then. Well, two-thirds of it was.
Well, the British Army was in Germany, but on the other hand, most of the action, any fighting that was going on...
Was going on the outpost.
Exactly.
Yes, but it was a good opportunity because, as you know, Warminster was organised on an all-arms basis. Mm. It was a good opportunity to have practical experience of all-arms warfare. Mm. Therefore, I think rightly so, it tended to be based on war in Northwest Europe or an all-arms concept with tanks and artillery and that sort of thing, rather than the sort of bushwhacking type of thing.
What happened then when you went down to Exeter? I think you...
Brigade Major, yeah. TA Brigade.
Headquarters 1...
3O Brigade.
1-3-0 Brigade. What did that consist of?
Well, it was just an infantry brigade of 3 TA battalions, the 4th 5th Somersets, the 4th Devons, the 4th 5th Somersets, and the 4th 5th DCLI brigade headquarters in Exeter. I rather wanted to be BM of a regular brigade, but it didn't work out that way. Mm. Actually, looking back now, I'm very glad I went to the TA, because it was my first and only experience of serving with the Territorial Army, and it was then quite a large proportion of the British Army, and it was no bad thing, actually.
What were the significant differences between working with TA soldiers as opposed to working with...
Well, you had to, instead of notching up, you had to notch down. You had to sit back and think, now, it's no good being the sort of pompous regular officer. You have got to accept that these chaps are doing it part-time, and therefore your approach has got to be a little bit, a slightly sort of indirect approach, I find, anyway. In other words, you don't ring up chaps and say, look, I get down here quickly, or do this, or do that. You say, look, I know it's probably a bad time, but I wonder if you could possibly see your way. That sort of approach. I was very lucky in the Brigade Headquarters staff because they were all chaps with wartime experience. I mean, I had a G3 who'd been G3 of an armoured brigade in the Western Desert. So, he could handle a radio net of a Brigade Headquarters better than I could. And
was he a regular or was he a TA man?
No, he was a schoolmaster.
Schoolmaster.
He was a schoolmaster here at Wellington School, actually. Mm. They were all. A lot of them became personal friends, actually. It was difficult. You could, on the other hand, become a bit too relaxed. There was always some people trying to try on over money matters, which was a bit difficult. For instance, people would say, look, I can't come in for drill night, but I'll do a couple of hours work in my home. And I said, no, this is not on. I'm not having this. Because it's so open to abuse, that. I mean, where do you end? So I said, I'm sorry, this is what it's going to be. You come here... If don't, well then, I'm not I'm not chalking it up. And the chap said, well, I don't like that, I go to the Brigadier. I said, you can go to the Brigadier anywhere else you like, but that's the way I first run it. And of course, they never did, because I'm sure the Brigadier would have backed me.
Who was the Brigadier at the time?
A chap called Filer.
What sort of chap was he?
Bloody difficult.
In what way was he difficult?
Well, he was a very mean man. But I'm not talking about that. I didn't like him, but I gave him my loyalty. And though he gave me a very hard time, he did give me extraordinarily good confidential reports. So that was...
Was he capable?
He was just bone idle. But never mind. But he was. He finished up as a major general. It's quite a good test of any. It's easy to give your loyalty and work for a chap you like. But it's less. It's a greater test of oneself to work for a chap who you don't like. And in fact, I rather despised him, really. I wasn't alone in that view. He had a very difficult time with one of the battalions. He offended them, and I had to sort of make bridges. But that's all down the river now. But the fact at the end of the day was he gave me a bloody good confidential report. I suppose that's all that mattered. But he let me run the things, which suited me, actually, because he was always off doing other things.
Isn't it the normal thing that the brigade major runs the brigade while the brigade commander is out visiting?
I didn't object to that.
Going around and showing himself and so on.
I mean, to be fair, the chap, he didn't breathe down my neck. He let me get on with it. It was just on a personal basis. I mean, he was quite a competent chap when he put his mind to it, but he was... never mind. No, I'm really not in the business of them.
Well, was he infantry by background?
Yes, he was. But of a regiment very different from mine. With different approach over many matters.
Well, you'd really got two regimental backgrounds, hadn't you? Because you've got the Baluchistan background,
yes,
and
right.
Then you've got Devon background on top.
But his regiment, I think, was ran on a different sort of style to the West Country regiment.
Is there a distinctive West Country style?
Well, it's to a lesser extent now.
But in
very
days.
Much so. I mean... the West Country, you don't shout at them, you don't scream at them. It's all rather dark. It's not like the sort of approach that you have to do with, say, with the kings or with jock, and you don't have to keep on hammering them into the ground like tent pegs. You ride them on the snaffle rather than on the bit, I think. That's my view. Anyway, that has always been a tradition, that you don't. The hard man approach doesn't get you any better results than the more laid back approach. His regiment was a London regiment, and they had a different style, and it reflected, I think, in his attitudes on something.
How did you get on with the battalion commanders?
Very well. This was a great joy. I mean, they all. Well, one of the battalions, of course, was my own regiment.
Yes.
One of the rewarding things was that I made a lot of friends with TA chaps, which I've retained ever since. And they were the regiment was very good to me. They always asked me down, I used to go and shoot woodcock and that sort of thing down in Cornwall, and they asked me to their regimental balls, and they would... up me up to the regimental tent at the bar, Bath and West show, that sort of business. So, from that point of view, it was, and of course, it gave me a slant on a completely different aspect of military life.
Were these COs, were they regulars or were they TA men?
One was solicitor. The other one, I'm not quite sure what he was. He'd been out in Bombay, Burma, in Burma forestry. But of course, they both had war service. But there, and then the seer of the Devons was a regular, my own regiment.
Now, it's often said that, you know, in the British Army, every regiment has its own particular characteristics and customs and ways of doing things. Did you find that there were, that each one of these battalions had a distinctive character of its own?
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think there was a great deal of difference between the way that the Somerset Light Infantry TA battalion operated and the DCLI one. Again, they were run very much on a laid-back sort of way. I can't say that... It would be different if you compare the two regular battalions, but I think with the TA, I was an eye opener to me because, of course, there was a great deal of residual wartime experience, and their enthusiasm which amazed me. The chaps, after a busy day's work, would turn out for an evening drill hall. They would give up a fortnight of their summer. I admired their dedication.
Were they well recruited?
Oh, yes. But then at one camp, one year, 1957, they called up the Zed Reservists. And so they came along, ticking like clocks. But... as understandable, I think most of them said, well, I'm here for a fortnight, I might as well enjoy it as sit back just sort of grumbling all the time. We did one major, the first camp I went to, there was a major divisional exercise, which did involve a nuclear explosion. It was an enormous Arden Salisbury plain, and we did on that occasion, for the first time, we actually practiced, you know, operating under nuclear conditions, but we hadn't got any nuclear kit.
What did it mean then, operating under nuclear conditions?
I'm trying to think now.
I mean, one thinks in terms of a wider dispersal in deployment, things like that, and digging in really deep with lots of overhead cover.
Well, we did a great deal of digging.
Yes.
We were in a sort of set piece position. It had a code name. It was quite a big exercise. The whole division was involved in it. The whole TA division, that was the 43rd Wessex Division. I think we were in a defensive position. I seem to remember that it was how to react under nuclear attack. And we certainly, for the TA, did a great deal of digging, which for the British Army, as you know, the British Army is probably the worst digging army in the world. Compared with the Germans or the Japanese, but on this occasion we really did dig. And then I remember HR came. This bloody great sapper thing went off. I can't remember very much except that there was the first time there was a sort of nuclear background.
What was the war role of the brigade?
Well, it was all part of the 43rd Division.
Yes.
Which was destined, I think, to move to... I can't remember now exactly. It was destined to move at sort of to Northwest Europe. I mean, the scenario painted was the reinforcement of Northwest Europe. I can't remember. It was all D plus or good many. It was operations with the British Army... Support of the British Army in Northwest Europe. So, I mean, to do an exercise like that nature made quite good sense.
What sort of kit did they have? Did they have good quality equipment and weaponry? And
still mostly World War II stuff. It was still the number 4 rifle. It was still the Bren gun. No, I don't. I did say earlier weapons and improvement. we were just on the threshold of the SLR, but that certainly hadn't got down to the TA. No, I mean, they were basically World War II weapons, the Wombat or Mobat. Three-inch mortar was still being used. There wasn't a great deal of change from World War II.
Did they have transport?
Yes, quite reasonable transport. I mean, we couldn't move the whole battalion, no. But, I mean, the transport scales were quite high. But then you see, that was you only drew extra transport when you went to camp. Didn't have great huge amount of vehicles sitting around because we hadn't got the drivers to maintain them. So that 50 weeks of the year you had minimal transport, and then when you went to camp you drew out your TA drivers. Went off early and drew out a whole lot of vehicles out of a vehicle depot.
What was the level of skill of the sort of soldiers in handling their weapons and equipment? Was it a reasonable?
Yeah, their actual weapon handling wasn't bad, because one of the more popular weekend trainings or drill days was to go out on the ranges, and we spent a lot of time. It so happened the 4th Devons were a very, very keen shooting. They won the China Cup, and so the actual marks, the sort of the weapon handling certainly wasn't bad, or shooting standards. They tended to be of the sort of classification range type rather than the few firing type of skills, but they were quite good, actually, yes. I mean, musketry, to use that old-fashioned word, was, I think, one of the stronger features of the...
What about turnover? Was there a lot of turnover of personnel in the battalions?
I don't think there was, really, no. It got tied up, of course, with these dead reservists, but
yes.
they were pretty well recruited, the battalions, and they didn't seem to have a great wastage rate.
Were they recruited?
Because I think in those days, employers were a bit more indulgent towards them. I think it was a fashionable thing for employers to be happy to let their men... Some of them even gave them an extra fortnight. I don't know, I'm told nowadays that that's not the case, and that employer isn't very keen to have TA chaps, because just when the critical moment when he's got some big deal on or something, the chap loses them. But in those days, and therefore, that in itself was an incentive to chaps. Quite a lot of West Country chaps, I think it actually gave them an extra fortnight on pay, so they got double pay. They got their TA pay, and so there didn't seem to be manpower was not a problem.
Were they recruited mainly from the rural areas or from the larger urban centres? Do you happen to know if it was?
There were a good deal more farm labour people about in the 50s than there are today. I think it was proportionate. There were obviously a lot of chaps from Exeter, a lot of people from Plymouth and Torquay, basically the whole company of Devons and Torquay. But there was a reasonable proportion of actual countrymen. Yes.
So it was a mixture then, not predominantly one or the other.
That's right, yeah.
Were there any significant changes in policy or training practice while you were brigade major?
No. No, there weren't, really. I think it was one of those periods, the British Army, when they weren't constantly having options for change and this sort of thing, that they, the they were just beginning that period when the British Army was becoming heavily involved in